The following program contains the opinions of the host, guests, and call-in participants. These do not necessarily represent the views of this show's distributors or sponsors. This program may contain obscene, profane, or otherwise objectionable language. Viewer discretion is advised. Yes, coming to your cordless, everybody. It's 11:02 p.m. on the East Coast of the United States. Hold on. Oh, geez. Got 8:02 on the West Coast. 2:02 in the afternoon in Sydney, Australia, where five people are watching this right now. And 2 minutes after 10 p.m. Central Time here in Northeast Minneapolis, the Brooklyn of the Midwest. I'm Jim Peters, and welcome to another edition of Jim Peters Tonight. Number 71, if I'm right, and I'm going to do our sponsor really quick, and then I'll tell you about what happened last night. So, this show is exclusively sponsored by Conk News at conk.com, conk.com. It's the single best conservative news aggregator on the web, period. You know, I talked this up. You got to check it out. I'm not kidding. You go to conk.com, and you'll see 75 news sources all on one page, all at once. All updates every 3 hours. Couldn't be more happy to be associated with these people. Seriously, if you're a news junkie, we sent out a press release yesterday, and I said this on the show. I said, if you're a news junkie, it's like a sexual experience, and it is. Trust me. So try that out when you get a chance, okay? All right, so what happened last night? Are we supposed to have Murray Sabrin on last night? We did not do a show. We canceled it at the very last minute. So here's the deal. I share this studio with another company, and my agreement with them is that, you know, they run usual, you know, business hours, you know, 9 to 6, whatever, you know, they're hardly ever in here past 6 o'clock, which is the reason we go live at 10 p.m. Central. You know, I got plenty of time, right? Well, last night I'm in here, it's around 9:05. And I'm getting set and I'm getting ready to go. And they come in and they say, well, we got a production emergency. Sorry. And I abdicate. That's my my agreement with them. If they need the studio, they get it. And I figured realistically this was going to happen once or twice a year. We've been doing this now for a little more than 5 months. So, yeah, it was kind of sort of time, you know. So I quickly called Murray on the phone and we rescheduled him for Monday. And we had to cancel the show. So that's what happened. With literally less than an hour to go. So, but we're not canceling. Right now, I'm live. I'm sitting in Northeast Minneapolis right now. And it's the Brooklyn and the Midwest because of three things. It's right across, like Brooklyn, it's right across the river from downtown. Like Brooklyn, it used to be a separate city. This used to be the city of St. Anthony before it merged with Minneapolis. And it used to be a dump. And now it's the coolest part of town. So, yeah, so that's what we got going here. And so I thought I'd, we got Murray coming up. You know, we got an interesting week coming up this coming week because I have to go back and check. So, like I said, it's our show number 71. I think this next coming week is going to be the first time we've had a legitimate guest on for every single show all week long. I think. I'm not sure. You know, I've been going on about this thing, about I want to do Monologue Mondays, you know, because most guests don't want to book on Monday. That's already going out the window. We got all of January, the rest of January is already booked up. At least half of February, I think more, is already booked up for guests. So, you know, so what do we got going on here? I'll tell you what we got going on. We got tonight, Jazz Shaw, weekend editor at hotair.com. I call him my brother from another mother because he's like the only person on the entire internet that has the same gig I do, and that is he writes conservative news and analysis. God, what's with me tonight? I'm tripping on my words. and he writes about UFOs, and I talk about the same thing. He writes, I talk. So it's a marriage made in heaven. We already taped the interview this afternoon. It's fantastic. Him and I talk about a whole bunch of stuff. Seriously, you don't want to miss this. It's great. So we rescheduled. Of course, we know we take Fridays off here. If you have never watched this show, it's Monday through Thursday. And yes, it's live. I'm actually sitting in Northeast Minneapolis talking to you right now. It goes right up to the satellite, and it comes right down to your phone. It does that. It's amazing. Technology for bullshit. So Murray Sabrin, we rescheduled him, economist extraordinaire. He's coming on Monday now, and we have even more questions. You know, I prefaced this on, you know, Wednesday or Tuesday about the fact that he's been predicting a major recession now for two and a half years. And he said it's going to happen before Election Day 2024. And there's many major economists now. They seem for last year or, the, you know, 2023, for most of that year, people were in agreement with them. Now there's a divergence of opinion. About a half of the economists think that's going to happen again, and a half of them don't. So although, like I mentioned, there's a guy named Harry Dent, who's a very famous economist. He not only thinks we're going to have a recession, he thinks the whole economy is going to collapse. And the thing is, we've been printing so much fake money. This is my point here, and I have a good friend of mine who's in finance, and he thinks, I have to tell you, and I was going to tell Murray this, and I don't know if he's watching, but my friend thinks Murray's nuts. He thinks, you know, it's plenty obvious we're going to have what they call a quote-unquote soft landing, and nothing's really going to happen. But we have been printing so much fake money for so long, I just can't imagine that something terrible is going to happen, not going to happen at some point. My friend says, well, yeah, it's going to happen at some point, but doesn't mean it's going to happen this year. All right, point taken. That's right. All right. So we got to talk to Murray about this, because he's putting himself out on the loop here. He's put himself on the line for like a couple of years now. He wrote a piece for Forbes about the same thing. You know, so, I mean, I want to see if he's changed his mind at all. Had a nice chat with him last night when we had to cancel the show. But, you know, I don't want to talk them out, you know, privately, because, you know, that's what we do here. We interview people. Anyway, so Murray's coming on Monday now. David Strawn from Hot Air, he's the associate editor there. He's coming on Tuesday. Love him, too. You know, you'd think at this point that I'm shilling for Salem Media properties, but I'm not. It's just I love these the work these guys do, and I also have it here next Tuesday, the 23rd, the week after David comes on, his boss comes on for the first time. Ed Morrissey, the editor-in-chief of HotAir.com, is coming on the show for the first time. So it'll be nice to talk to him, too. He runs a video podcast. I think his is weekly, if I'm right. Kind of similar to this. We do this every night because we're bored and lonely. I don't know. You know. And then on Wednesday of next week, we got the At Night Dynamic Duo, their second appearance. That's Jennifer Oliver O'Connell from RedState.com, another Salem Media property. Jesus, you know. And Jeff Meyer from the CEO of Conk News, our sponsor. They come on together. So they love each other. They got a thing going. So, you know. Although Jennifer's she's in Louisiana, if I'm right. So they got one of those long distance things going, and Jeff's in Prior Lake, Minnesota, to his 10,000 square foot house. Thursday, and this is big thrill here, big thrill. Thursday next week, a week from tonight, Stan Gordon, the famous UFO investigator, is coming on. We booked this 4 months ahead of time. I'm not kidding. You know, we've only been on doing this since August. I think we booked this in September, and this was the earliest he could do it. And unfortunately, it's terrible, but you know, I'm not going to pass this up at all. He's going to be on the phone, audio only, but still. And he told me he's willing to talk for an hour. He says he knows all sorts of shit. And his primary claim to fame, which he's told me now, that he's kind of getting tired of talking about this, but it's really important because he was there, and that is he was 17 years old living in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, when that stupid UFO crashed there in December 1965. And that's been a huge thing. It's one of the landmark UFO cases in the UFO literature. So the Army will tell you, and they showed up in like 2 hours. The Army will tell you it was a meteor, but at least two dozen people in the town saw the thing that crashed, and it was a spacecraft. And everyone who saw it said it had really weird writing on the side of it that, you know, kind of looked like hieroglyphics, but no one could figure it out. So he lived there. He was living in the town. He was there the night this thing crashed, and that's kind of started his whole career. Now he's gone on to do a lot of Bigfoot investigating, too. So, as a matter of fact, that's what he's keen to talk about. So I'm sure we'll talk about that, too. And speaking of Bigfoot investigating, so the week after that, we got on I told you on Tuesday, Ed Morrissey's coming on. On Wednesday, the 24th, Albert Rosales is coming on, and he has written 15 books basically on what he calls humanoid creatures. And he's not necessarily saying they're extraterrestrial. He's just, and all the series is based on reports he's gotten and other people have given him about weird shit that's happened to people. Some of them are UFO abductions. Not all of them. Not all of them at all. Some of them are ghosts, poltergeists, anything that kind of looks humanoid but actually isn't a human, he writes about. So we want to talk to him. I've been reading his last book, and he said it's going to be the last book in the series. He has written these books basically based on their chronological order. They literally start at year zero when Jesus Christ was around, and the last one, the one I'm reading, is 2000 to 2015, and he says he's not going to do any more. He is writing another. He wrote another book on UFOs, but he's not going to write any more in this series. So again, I have to tell you, some of these reports are chilling and fascinating. So we're looking forward to talking to him. And then speaking of UFOs, on Thursday the 25th, we have Mark Marcel coming on, and he was named Bigfoot Hunter of the Year by the Bigfoot Times. Daniel Perez, who runs the Bigfoot Times, he's been a guest on the show. And I get the Bigfoot Times, and I told Daniel, I said, I want to talk to this guy. And so, he's coming on. So that'll be interesting, too. The weather report by Sunday, it's going to be cold as fuck here. This is, you know, I didn't live here all my life. And, I grew up in a small town in Minnesota. I moved away. I came back. Shit. What was I thinking? I lived in Los Angeles. I mean, my God. So we're going to have one of these days here on Monday or Sunday or Monday. They don't really know which one, but it's going to be cold as hell anyway. We are not going to bust zero for the high. And so we usually have in January here 2 or 3 days and almost always in a row where the high is like 22 below zero. That happens. And it's like, no, you don't want, no, we're nuts. We're crazy. Now, and Monday, I'm going to preview this too, because I love this woman. Monday, I'm getting my hair cut by Brittany Shears. She's a preeminent hairstylist here in Northeast Minneapolis. So I'm going to come on Monday's show with a nice haircut. And so I'm going to see her, and she asked me to bring her a Big Mac. Okay. Sure, fine. Anyway, love that woman. And if you need to get your haircut, I can't promo her. I know she just went to moved to new salon, so I don't exactly know where that is yet. I'm going to find out. But yeah, so anyway, hats off to Brittany for making me look so goddamn handsome. Yeah, shit. Yeah, I'm fat. Have you noticed? You can't see me from the waist down. That's the problem. So, all right. So tonight, this is what I want you guys to do, and I've been talking about this since the beginning of the year, and I'm going to continue to talk about it. You can now send me a text message live on the air, and I got a panel here on the side monitor here where I'm looking at them. The number, it's the same number on the screen. It's the same number it's always been, 408-458-5088. That's 408-458-5088, and if you know your area codes, believe it or not, that's a Silicon Valley area code. We got that number at random, which is really pretty cool. So you can send me a text message, and I will now see it during the show. I didn't do this previously, but the reason is because on all the platforms we're on 7 platforms, video, and 1 platform live on audio. On all of them, not well, not they don't all have chat boards, but the ones that do, you can't see what the other people are chatting on the other services, and so that's bullshit, you know. So I mean, we're kind of primarily Rumble based, and I'll tell you there's a reason for that too. Last Thursday, Jeff Meyer was on here, and we were talking about who knows what. Apparently, something about January 6th. We got flagged by YouTube for information. Now, this is the third time. We've only been running the show. We've done 70, at that point, 69 shows. And we've been flagged by YouTube three times. It's like, fuck you. So you're wondering, I don't pay any attention to YouTube. And because I know that sooner or later, they will just cancel us. They'll pull the plug. You know, I know that because we're talking about conservative stuff and we're all conspiracy theorists and you can't have that spreading. You know, it's like I had Mark Morano on here from climatedemo.com, got flagged for, you know, well, him and I are both talking about the fact that climate change is bullshit. Oh, by the way, climate change is bullshit. Just straight out. There's nothing to it. Oh, no, I shouldn't say that. And I've said this, I want to be very accurate here. Yes, the world is warming up. That is true. I don't know a single scientist that disputes that. The world's been warming up for the last 300 years. Are humans causing that? No, they aren't. You can talk, these people can talk to them, they're blue in the face. You know, it's like, the science is settled. Follow the science. I did follow the science. You're full of shit. Humans aren't causing this. And Patrick Moore, the scientist who's been on this program, he said the proof of this is the fact, yes, the world's been warming up for the last 300 years, and for the first 150, the first half of those 300 years, there was no industrialization on the planet. And the world warmed up anyway. Geez, I wonder why. You know, now there's an article, I can't remember where it was, big study came out, they're running... somebody, and this actually made the liberal media, and that's what I'm going to talk about here in a second too, about the fact that, you know, maybe somebody said, well, the primary reason the world's warming up is because of the Earth's rotation around the sun. No shit. Jeez, I wonder where we get our energy from, you know? It's like, they're stupid. Now, I can't remember the name of the, and I should check, because I talk about this constantly, the name of the effect. It starts with an M that's named after a Russian astronomer about what happens. Basically, the way Patrick explained this to me, it's in his book. His book's called something about threats of doom. It's on our website. Oh, by the way, if you've never seen, I thought I should do this. If you've never seen our website, there it is. There's our front page. You see this thing down at the bottom where it says upcoming guests. We basically list the guests for every week. Right now we have 2 weeks up there. And we have a blog. We run a blog and we post stuff. And and Patrick Moore's book is posted in our blog. So I can't remember exactly what it's called. It has an unusual title. It's on Catastrophes and Threats of Doom. But he explains in this book, and he explained when he was on our show, about the fact that what happens with the Earth's rotation, or I'm sorry, it's revolution, the Earth's revolution around the sun is largely wobbles because of the pull of the other planets in the solar system. And it's very much akin, a good analogy is what, excuse me, is how the moon causes tides on Earth. So the moon revolves around the Earth and where it's at, and, you know, and it has to do with that. Controls how the tides go up and down. Well, the Earth revolves around the sun, and where especially the larger bodies in the solar system, that would be Saturn, Jupiter, and Uranus, where they're at has a tendency to control how far the Earth is from the sun, just the same way as the moon controls the tides. So the because of that, the Earth's revolution around the sun wobbles. That's the thing. And how far we are from the sun determines how, whether the temperature on Earth as an aggregate goes up and down. Now, I was talking about the fact it's going to be below zero here, the high, this coming weekend. Is that climate change? No, that's weather. That's fucking weather. It is, you know, that's another thing. No, just because, you know, oh my God, it's been so hot this year. Yeah, we apparently here in the United States, we had the hottest year on record in 2023. Is that climate change? No, that's weather. It's just a stupidity. The stupidity is just fucking mind-boggling. Any rate, so I want to, before we go on to the interview here with Jazz, I want to talk about, and of course I didn't actually finish. Okay, so you can text me at 408-458-5088, and if you want to call us, I'm going to bring this, put this back on the screen. You see the menu up there, it says call in on our website. You go to that page, there's a giant big blue button at the top of the screen. You push that button, you're in the queue. You get to preview your camera and microphone, and you're in the queue, and I'll put you on. You can do that. I particularly encourage you to do it after the interview tonight, but if you want to do it beforehand, that's fine, too. I'm happy to talk to anybody anytime. We are supposedly, according to Talkers Magazine, the Bible of talk media in the United States. This was the first talk show in America to take video phone calls. And we're proud of that, but you guys don't call a lot. And I think one of the reasons is because you're all trollers. But the thing is, I have to point this out too. In that preview screen, when you press the big blue button, you can pick no video on the camera setting, and you'll go live with a mic on your camera, but your camera won't show, your picture won't show up if you want to do that. And we have had people do that. So that's up to you. So I preview something tonight on our show description, and I want to address this because I already had a friend of mine who already texted me about this, about the fact that supposedly, and every study ever done on this shows this. Now the latest study is done by the Skeptic Research Center, and they too concluded that conservatives are more in tune with the true nature of what's going on, the liberals, because of the way the media operates. And here's the way the media operates. First of all, I'm not pulling this out of my butt. 96% of all reporters, journalists in the United States, identify as liberal. That figure just came out. It's always been, here's the deal. It's always been between 90% and 95%, mostly. The deal is the other 5 to 10% aren't necessarily conservatives. Right now, according to this latest survey, 4% of all journalists identify as conservative. A lot of them are unaffiliated, or not a lot, but that would be like the other 6%, right? But 90% to 95% of them are liberal. Okay, so they create the mainstream media in the United States. Other than Fox News, the entirety of the mainstream media in the United States is liberal. So you're wondering, well, why, Jim, is a conservative? Are conservatives generally better informed? The reason is because we can't avoid the liberal media. We can't. There's so much of it. I mean, it's everywhere. In major outlets, other than Fox News, and it goes without saying, but I do have to say it at this point, that Fox News completely dominates the cable news landscape. Hell, it dominates cable television, period. It's not just the highest rated cable news channel, it's the highest rated channel on all of cable. ESPN is second, and for many years ESPN was first. And now, I credit to them, they've kind of got their shit together. MSNBC is third. At CNN, which was the very first dedicated cable channel ever, launched in 1980, I think it was 22nd or 29th. Nobody's watching. Nobody's watching for shit. I mean, at this point, it's almost falling out of quote-unquote mainstream media. But like I said, you know, us conservatives, we can't avoid the mainstream liberal media. You just can't avoid it. So we see it whether we kind of want to or not. I watch every now and then. I caught it again tonight. I watch the CBS Evening News because Norah O'Donnell's really, really pretty, and I'm a pervert. So, and I'm just astonished at how lame that broadcast is. That's part of the reason I watch it. I mean, it's the self-importance that these people have is mind-boggling. You know, they'd like to think they're all geniuses. All these journalists are all stellar human beings. Yeah, they're educated, but it doesn't take a lot of either talent or work to be a journalist. I'm sorry, it doesn't. I mean, they will argue, you know. A lot of it's just plain boring. I mean, it's kind of like being a detective or an investigator. A lot of it's just gumshoe work. And, of course, you know, you got to do that. But the thing is, I mean, you don't have to, you know, well, I went to journalism school. Well, if I'm right, 2-3 years ago, one of the Pulitzer Prize in German journalism had no journalism training whatsoever. I mean, it's not hard to, you know, you can master the basics of journalism in a week. And I'm just amazed at the pomposity of these people getting on television and then they tell their quote unquote stories, you know. Now, their stories are anything they want it to be. So tonight they did, I have to admit I had the sound off, so I did not actually hear the story, but they interviewed a family of migrants whose children were going to school and couldn't, I mean, I got this because, believe it or not, they couldn't speak English, so there was subtitles on the bottom of the screen. And their children don't speak English, so they feel kind of lost at school, you know, and the mother's crying, and it's like, you know, oh, gee, you know, stop, make it stop. I mean, here's the problem. So it's all emotional, tug at your feet, and the reason is they're tugging at your heartstrings is because women mostly watch television news. That's the reason. Now, if you live in any major city in the United States, here in Minneapolis, it's, my God, it's just like, it's dreadful that the local television stations with their news programs have basically decided to cater to women, and it's so plainly obvious. I mean, you know, it's like, and my complaint with this is that, okay, that story about the migrant family, all right, so maybe that's that is somewhat newsworthy, but the thing is, you don't have to put that family on the screen to make your point. But you know, they can't do what I'm doing, and here's the reason: they won't. You know, I mean, I've always said this. This is not a news program. We do analysis and interviews. That's what we do here. So, but I would like to think that after you hear the news during the day, one of the reasons we do this at night is kind of to wrap up everything that's going on, and also because I want you to sleep with me. There's that too. Good and done. I'm joking. You can, hold on. I'm going to get rid of this. You can, I'd like to think you know the news and we can talk about like what's going on instead of just the facts, because the facts are like, there's, you know, you watch the beginning of the show, I have the intro there, Alex Kay's wonderful graphic, animated graphic, and it says news is a commodity, and yeah, I coined that, and it is, news is a commodity. The facts, everybody knows the facts and everybody can get the facts. I mean, it's like, you know, we don't need 50 reporters to go down to the Capitol and figure out what the hell's going on. You know, 3 or 4 of them will do the job just fine. But everyone sends their reporters, and they report back to the big mothership, and then they put it out, and it's all pretty much the same thing. And I'm wondering, well, they're wasting their precious broadcasting bandwidth time. Not talking about anything that's actually really important to you. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. So at any rate, oh God, I just remembered something. Holy shit. I got a problem here. All right. We're going to, I never downloaded the interview. Okay. That's good, Jim. That's fantastic. All right. So, this is a disaster. All right, so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to hide my picture on the screen here. I want you folks to hold on for just a second, and I'll be back. Okay. All right. Here we go. All right. Okay, I got it now. So now I'm going to do a commercial of Conk News again, and I'm going to put, this is the Conk News front page. This is so stupid. I grabbed this, and I forgot to download the interview. But here it is. This is the Conk News front page from about 9:15, about an hour ago. So, like you can see, there's a whole bunch of, I'm going to actually scroll through this. Hold on a second. You can't see my cursor, but you can see what's going on here. 75 news sources feed into this every 3 hours, and all the pictures, everything. It's just, if you're a news junkie, you can't get a better news source than this. It's just fantastic. It's at conk.com, conk.com. They sponsor this program. My former employer, I worked there for 3 years. I'm proud of to be involved in it. So at any rate, yeah. So and also, you'll notice right at the top of that left hand column there, there's a book by Jennifer Oliver O'Connell. She doesn't actually work for Conk News, but they kind of hype her stuff. So and we do too. So Jeff Meyer, the CEO of Conk News, they're going to be on next Wednesday. They're going to be there. So yeah. We got that going on. So I'm going to play this interview now with Chad Shaw. Here we go. Joining us from his home in upstate New York, the weekend editor of HotAir.com, Chad Shaw, my brother from another mother. How you doing, my friend?
Jim, always good to see you. Pleasure to be here. You know, it's a terrible time of year, terrible administration, but we're making the best of it.
Yeah, so here's the deal. I'm going down the whole list here. You've written a couple articles in the last week or so about Hunter Biden, and also, it just, like, I assume you know this, in about the last hour, your colleague Karen Townsend posted on Hot Air that the House committee voted to hold Hunter in contempt, finally.
Yes.
So, first of all, what is it with this guy? You know, I mean, I've gone back in my mind, you go back to, like, Billy Carter and all the kind of nefarious, weird relatives these presidents have had. This guy takes the cake. I mean, really, I won't put this in your mouth because, you know, maybe it's disgusting, but really, he's a despicable prick. He is. There's just no way around it, as far as I can tell.
I've never really heard anything to say that would make him an admirable figure or character. I don't judge the guy for having had drug problems. Lots of people, lots of families deal with that, you know.
Yeah, but Jazz, is that his problem?
Well, no, that's not his problem, but that's what they try to make it about. Whenever they say, oh, you're trying to take advantage of this guy who's in recovery. No, we're trying to take advantage of a guy who got tens and tens and tens of millions of dollars from adversarial countries and funneled it through a bunch of shell companies and spread it around to his family, including his father, who's now the president, by the way. I think that's the big issue, not whether or not he was smoking too much crack or banging too many hookers.
Yeah.
You know, the hooker thing's problematic in its own way because a lot of them, to me, look, some of them that showed up on his own laptop did not look like they were 18. There's another issue, you know. So, yeah, he's a scumbag as far as I'm concerned. He doesn't admit to any of it, so we don't have any proof. He hasn't been convicted of any of those. He's never really been charged. I think he went through life and skated through life on his father's name, and he had too much money and no sense of responsibility, is my opinion. And because he just felt that he was untouchable and footloose and fancy free, he fell into some very dark places. And now it's starting to come back to haunt him, and I believe coming back to haunt his father. But now that he's gotten clean, hope so, really sincerely hope he has. Now he's starting to act all self-righteous about it. Like, why are you coming after me? Why are you saying all these things about me? Well, dude, look at your laptop. That's why we're saying these things. That's why Congress is investigating you and your father. You know, who else goes how many years was it? At least 6 or 7 years. Bringing in that kind of money doesn't pay one dime of taxes,
Yeah.
and nobody says anything to them.
Right.
And the IRS is working with the DOJ, and they're just sort of like letting it all slide off the table. It's like, if you or I did that, we'd be in prison, man. And then he's like, well, stop going after somebody in recovery. No, pay your friggin' taxes.
Yeah.
You know, that's the whole thing.
I'm going to read a quote here from Karen's article, which was only posted about 30 minutes ago. And this happened about an hour ago. And she says, quote, "The problem is that the Biden family has no business to offer in exchange for big bucks, except for access to Joe Biden and his political corrections. It really is as simple and as corrupt as that. And I've maintained for the longest time, you know, the Democrats found the fact there's no proof, there's no proof. Well, actually, maybe there isn't any proof, but there's a shitload of evidence, and there's enough evidence. If he was just a quote unquote normal guy, all the entire family under RICO laws would have been in jail for 20 freaking years. You know, that's my personal feeling."
Oh, absolutely. But even the no proof thing, there's proof that Joe Biden, on I've lost count of how many occasions, has flatly lied about all of this.
Yes.
He's on video, he's on audio, he's done interviews where he has said things that have now been proven to be demonstrably, completely false, and repeated those lies for years on end. And some of those lies are very serious. Like, I never did any business with my son. Well, if the business was totally harmless and inane, why would you deny it? Why would you begrudge your son the opportunity to make money in business, even though he's doing business in areas where he has no knowledge, no expertise? He has nothing, like you said, and Karen said, nothing to offer whatsoever except access to his father. And Joe Biden shows up at one point giving an interview admitting that he went and withheld United States taxpayer money from a foreign government until they fired a prosecutor who was looking into his son. He's on tape. Anybody
Yeah.
can see it. So you're saying no evidence. Well, there's such a thing as compelling non-physical evidence that holds up in court. I
Yeah.
think a lot of that would hold up
Well,
in court.
I didn't say no evidence. I said no proof. They're thinking, you know, there's plenty of evidence. I mean, there's a preponderance of circumstantial evidence. I mean, I think.
And there may indeed be proof. They haven't gotten to the bottom of that, but that whole network of shady looking shell companies that they set up that apparently did no business whatsoever except transfer money back and forth and back and forth
Yeah.
and winding up in different people's pockets. There's a money trail there, and if you follow it far enough, there may be some proof.
Well, it's just not that, Jazz. It's like if you the only reason to do that is to launder money. I mean, that's the only reason you do it. You know, there's no other
That's the
reason.
definition of money laundering,
Exactly.
yes.
It's the definition, right? That's very, you know.
How let me ask you, Jim, how many shell companies do you have?
Well, actually, I have one that runs this. It's not a shell company. I have one company that runs this show.
My
That's
wife's father has one, but
it.
it's there because of tax reasons, and it's doing legitimate business, and it's transferring money from stuff that he has with government contracts and keeping it separate from private sector contracts that they have, and it's a legal requirement for tax purposes. But it's
I
actually,
don't.
they're doing business. I don't have any. I don't have any, and he doesn't have any that do nothing but receive checks and chop them up and send out checks. That sounds like something a drug dealer does.
Right, that's right.
It
No,
really
it
does.
is. Yeah, that's right.
It's
That's
like
right. Yeah.
we got to split the loot up, you know?
I do have to reference this though, because this was a brilliant article on your part, and we'll post this on our blog. You wrote like about 5, 6 days ago, Hunter Biden knows his art buyers are and ethical guidelines were a scam. And you mentioned this article, and you're absolutely right about this. In some ways, this is the most brilliant freaking scam anyone's ever come up with. Because it's quote unquote art, you can't argue with it. You know? That's basically what you said in the article.
I linked back to the first article I wrote about that last year when this came up. And at the time, I begrudgingly actually gave him some credit, but I was worried that a lot of other people are going to do this. This is almost untouchable
Yeah, that's
because
right.
his sugar brother, whatever his name is one of the big buyers of his art, and he can just go get a paint by numbers set and splash some stuff around and be like, okay, this is my art, it's for sale. And somebody's like, ooh, I'll give you $1 million. You know, there's a lot of artists that my wife actually went to school and graduated with an art degree, and she isn't was an artist, but she went into teaching. Because it's very hard to get into the art world and make any money. It's not a thing that really happens unless you're a teacher, you know. But you know, when art goes up for sale, art is worth what somebody's willing to pay for it. Exactly that amount. And for most people, it's very hard to sell any artwork, particularly if you don't have a history as an artist and haven't been in shows. But if you show up and you're some political figure whose father is tremendously influential, and you go, hey, I'm having a gallery, and we were told, we were assured by the Biden administration, we have guardrails in place. This is going to be anonymous. Nobody's going to know who's buying the art, where it's coming from. It's all legit. Turned out, the New York Post found out, it's complete nonsense.
Well,
He
Jeff,
knew
let me
at
ask.
least who 70% of the buyers were, and they were all major Biden donors.
Did
It was complete nonsense.
it occur to you that just the fact that they were anonymous actually might have even been a problem? In other words, they were selling the bug as a feature. Did that occur to you?
That crossed my mind, but you have a double-edged sword there. You can't keep the identity of the buyers secret from the public without the Bidens knowing it, because they can get a newspaper just like anybody else. But you can let the Bidens know, but not release the information to the media, which is what happened for a while until the truth came out and we found out the Sugar Brother was one of the buyers and some other big Biden donors were the buyers. And the place where they really screwed up was the art director who was handling all this, when the New York Press, thank God, finally came along and tracked the guy down and said, didn't you have an agreement with the government that you weren't going to tell anybody this? And he's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. It was an art gallery. It was an art show. I've never heard anything. I'd never talked to anyone. So everything they said from the White House podium, that was all made up. It was all more lies. They were just lying to us again. And now that's been exposed, and the media is ignoring the story largely. And it's like it'll get swept under the rug with the rest of the Biden crises that we're dealing with. So, sorry to say.
No, it's
Bad
not.
news, sports fans.
Yeah. Belichick's out. Hey, okay, I'm going to move on here. You wrote
Sure.
about Donald Trump's birther theory for Nikki Haley. And this is kind of interesting because I didn't know this about the fact that she was born to non-citizen parents. But as you brought up in this article, it actually doesn't matter. It's like, that's kind of like legally irrelevant, but I didn't know that. I didn't know she was.
Yeah, I had known that previously because when she first launched her camp, before she launched her campaign, when she was at the UN, if I turned my camera around far enough, I probably can't hit it from here. I used to be a pretty big fan of Nikki Haley, and I don't really hate her or dislike her now. But when Donald Trump was finishing his first term, I was at CPAC, and I went and I actually bought a Nikki Haley 2020 cap or 2024 cap, because I had assumed at that time that Donald Trump was going to win a second term because he was just performing so well. And she seemed like a young, energetic person with all the right resume points that you're looking for. She had legislative experience in South Carolina. She had executive experience as governor of South Carolina. She had foreign policy credentials working at the UN. And she was young. She was obviously smart, very well spoken. And I was like, yeah, I could see her as being, you know, the next one. And, but now that she decided to challenge anyway, after things worked out the way they did, Trump went on Truth Social and posted something from somebody saying, she has to be disqualified. She's not qualified to be president because of her parents. And that's nonsense.
Yeah, it
Um,
is.
she was born on American soil in the United States, to parents who were not yet citizens, but they were here legally and in the process of applying for citizenship.
Well, forgive me, but even if they weren't here legally, if she's born on American soil, she's a citizen, right?
Technically, today it's birthright citizenship, and there is a big, and I mentioned there's a big fight going on about we need to get rid of birthright citizenship for people who come here illegally,
Yeah.
because you want that birthright citizenship to be conferred upon the children of people who are here to integrate into our society, here to be Americans, here to do that. Even under that, if we had made that change, she'd still be qualified,
Right.
And aside from that, she only has to be 35 years old, have lived in the United States for at least 14 years, and that's the whole list. And she hits all the bases, so yeah, she's totally qualified. I have my own questions about birthright citizenship. The founders, I think, not the founders, but the amendments that cover this matter and the founders, they sort of did leave the door open, like, well, if you make it onto shore and you have a baby, it's sort of like Red Rover, Red Rover, and
Yeah.
the baby's a citizen. I think we could have exceptions for that, but it would be complicated to make that change. You'd have to have really good definitions for who would or wouldn't qualify and under what circumstances. It would probably require another constitutional amendment, and those are almost impossible to pass these days. So, yeah, and in that scope, then no, there's no question whatsoever. She was born in South Carolina, and she's lived here long enough. That means she's lived here her entire life. So, yeah, she's qualified.
I don't really know specifically or in detail about how this other than the qualifications you stated, but do you think that there's a possibility that the founders, and I don't even know who drew up those amendments and what year they were from, made some assumptions that weren't even written in the bill just because they, I mean, my big thing is on this is term limits. I'm convinced there aren't term limits in the Constitution because the founders and never thought that anybody would want to make a career out of being in federal government. And so they'd even bother with it. Do you think there's any, well, there were assumptions that were made that were never actually, explicitly stated?
I think that's one possibility, but also a lot of this came along later. Keep in mind that we had a bunch of people who were presidents, candidates for president, high elected officials at the founding of the country when the Constitution was established, who were born in England.
Of course, right. That's right.
So they weren't going to be sitting there going, well, nobody can do anything if they weren't born here, because a lot of them weren't born here.
Right.
There were still people coming over in powerful families. So this all came along later. But it's here, and that's the thing we have, and you do have to, be a legitimate citizen. That's one of them, to run for president, and like I said, a couple other very minor age and residency requirements. So I think the vision of the founders, they had great vision about many things, and yeah, I think they just assumed that nobody would be interested in any sort of a leadership position or doing something unless they loved this country and they believed in the experiment they had launched and what we had founded and wanted to keep it going. And they didn't think anybody would come in who would want to destroy it. And I think Joe Biden has largely torn down that fantasy, because he seems to be doing one heck of a job of trying to rip things apart at the moment, or at least the people who write his scripts and
Well, that's the
run his
thing.
office do.
First of all, is it him or is it the handlers? And secondly, is it incompetence or is it deliberate? I throw that out. Both of
For whoever's doing it, and I do think a lot of it is the handlers, to a certain extent, a lot of it is the Obamas right now, I believe, because they've been behind the scenes the whole time and now they've been stepping out in front. I think they've been very much helping to guide and run the Biden policy and administrations and urging them to do things that Obama didn't have the nerve to because they would have been too outrageous back
Yeah,
then.
right.
So I think those parts are intentional. I think some of it, I'm not sure. I don't say this to be insulting. I'm getting older myself. I'm dealing with my own cognitive issues some days. Forget the names of my pets and things sometimes. I'm getting up, heading towards 70. And you know, I think there's probably a lot that Joe Biden either isn't aware of or doesn't remember at various times, or he reads a lot of scripts that he's given, and there's probably times of the day and certain days where he gets into it a little more vocally, and he probably at least feels like he understands what's going on and he's out there doing something. And there's other times where he's really just saying what he's told to be said, what he's told to say. And he hopes for as much time as possible where he can hang out at home or go to the beach in Delaware or in the various vacation spots. I published something not too long ago where somebody tallied up all the vacation. He spent more than a third, like 37% of his days last year on vacation. I mean, he doesn't do the job. There's somebody doing it in the background. There's a bunch of people that are writing the policies who are going forth and having the meetings. Tony Blinken is into it hip deep in a lot of ways, and I think he's totally competent and cognizant. I don't mean competent in a good way. I think he's completely aware of what he's doing, and I think it's very intentional. And if he was opposed to what was happening, he would have objected and quit by now if he had a soul. So, but Biden himself, no, I don't think so.
You know, Jazz, in 2008, I walked into a Barnes and Noble and I picked off a table Barack Obama's book, Dreams from My Father. And also,
I have that.
did you read the whole thing?
No, I got, I'll confess, it got pretty tiresome after like the first quarter of it, and I
Well, here's
never
the
really
deal.
finished
I
it.
cracked the book open, I read a random chapter. I read the chapter all the way through, and I freaking didn't believe it. I didn't think an American person could actually think this. And first of all, it's very important to bring this up. Everybody thinks the title of that book is Dreams of My Father. It's actually Dreams for My Father, which is, I think, an important distinction. And it proved to me that I still think this, that when Barack Obama goes to sleep at night and his head hits the pillow and he's looking at the ceiling about to he's basically a communist at heart. I really do think that and I think that this is my own personal opinion here. I think that he is imposing his vision on America both through his term. Like you said, most of the stuff's too outrageous to actually have been done overtly, but now he can do it behind the scenes overtly, and I think that's what's happening. I don't know. That's my personal feeling.
We blur the lines of some of these words. I, having followed the Obamas closely enough and read parts of the book and all that, and had a look behind the curtains, there's a not terribly subtle but important distinction, I think, between communism and socialism. And I think the Obamas are definitely socialists.
For sure.
They are
Absolutely right.
globalists.
You're
They
right.
do not believe in America as a global leader and as an independent actor. They think everybody should be under the thumb, well, a level of thumbs. They think the American people should be under the thumb of the American government, but the American government is beholden to global interests and things like that. And that's where this comes from. And a lot of it, like the border policy, which Obama never dared to try, but is now in place under Joe Biden, that's part of that whole globalist agenda. It's like borders don't really matter because we shouldn't be able to keep people out. Everybody should be able to go wherever they want, and nobody needs to have border security. But we've seen the results of what happens because the people from the crappy places want to go and invade the people who actually spent 200 years building good places where there's prosperity and the things that come from capitalism. And that's why they hate capitalism. They'd rather have equality with everyone having equally little than having some countries that are successful that, you know, follow a course and provide success for their people. And then we have border control. And it's like, yeah, the people we can afford to take in, people with good intentions, we will welcome you. We have a process. Come do that. This is antithetical to all of them. They would rather have the whole system torn down and then everybody be equally poor, except for the elites at the top who still get to fly their private jets to Davos, which you're seeing all the time.
Yeah, I want to thank you for that because that's a much more cogent description of what I was actually trying to talk about. I mean, you're right. I agree with you. I use the word communist as a label, and you're right, it isn't actually accurate. What you're talking about, I totally buy what you're talking about. That's what I meant. And so,
yeah, I mean, yeah. China is an excellent example of actual communism.
Yeah,
the Chinese Communist Party, that's actual communism, where there is a relative handful of people that have all the power, hold all the money, have fabulous lives, and there's a ton of people in China who are destitute, who hate it, but the government overtly, as opposed to covertly, cracks down on them. They crack down on the Uyghurs and anybody who speaks out, and they just throw them in camps, and they don't apologize for it. That's communism. Well, socialism, you have to play a mind game. You have to convince everybody we're all going to be poor together, and we're going to tear down the rich people. That's what happened in France in the revolution.
Yeah.
And we saw how that worked out, because pretty soon you wind up with guillotines. But, you know, it always ends the same way. It ends the way it's ending in Venezuela right now.
Yeah.
But for some reason, nobody learns, and this is what the left in America wants.
That's the best contemporary example of what happened in Venezuela. I mean, only 30 years ago, Venezuela was the richest country in South America.
And amazingly rich farmlands, biggest agriculture producer, massive oil supplies. They were doing so well. And then socialism took over. And right now, the country is on the verge of collapse and revolution.
People can't even eat. You know, that's right. The amazing thing. It's like
they're fleeing and they're all coming here because Joe Biden invited them.
That's right. So I'm going to reference another article you've written just recently. Pro-Hamas monsters vandalize a war memorial cemetery in Los Angeles. And so now the interesting thing is I'm going to have David Strom on next week, but he just wrote an article in your publication about the fact that basically these pro-Hamas people, this has become a cult. And by the In his mind, by the strict definition of the term, and that's kind of what I'm thinking. I mean, I was talking about on my show a couple days ago. You're not convincing anybody to join your cause by doing this shit. So then why are they doing it? And my answer is, it's an emotional release for them. This is all emotional bullshit. They're basically acting like children.
I have an alternate theory. Okay. I think that's an element of it. I think it's one part of a much larger tapestry. I think a lot of the activity, and this dates back to the BLM riots of 2020 and everything else, but since Biden came into power, there's so many other things. All the transgender stuff that's going on, the outrages, the fighting for mandating child surgeries and all that, the mass looting that gets ignored, which ties back to the defund the police thing. I think it's an overwhelm and overthrow strategy. Throw so many problems at the country at the same time that the system eventually breaks down.
Uh-huh.
If the crime gets so bad and law enforcement is overwhelmed, if the country is overrun by so many migrants, if all of these things and the craziness, like the stuff you were just discussing and all the trans stuff and all that, to where it seems like the world has just gone insane and the government is no longer capable, or not willing in this case, to do anything to course correct, and people start feeling hopeless, then the system collapses. What happens when the system collapses? Well, then everyone becomes completely dependent on the government.
Right, exactly, right.
And capitalism is no longer necessary because there's no need to work and try to be successful if the government taxes you to death and people steal all your stuff. And I think it is, I realize how conspiratorial this sounds, I think it's an underlying fabric below all the things we've been discussing. They would like to see traditional America collapse so that the current system will be replaced by something wherein the government maintains complete control, not like in China through brutal crackdowns and locking people up, just because you're so destitute and desperate that you'll take whatever the government gives you and follow whatever rules they say because you don't see any other choice. I know that sounds really horrible. That sounds really dark. But I think it underlies a lot of what we're talking about.
I agree. But the thing that really amazes me is that these people, and if you want to call them, you know, budding socialists, they don't seem to realize that the vast majority of the shit they want to do exists because of the money we have in this country. And so they basically,
exactly,
they're going to kill the money supply, and they're basically going to kill their own dream. And they don't seem to understand that those things are connected. I find the stupidity of that just amazing.
Well, why do they think that when they convince a president to say, the doors are open, come on, anybody that makes it across, Red Rover, you can stay here. Why do you think tens of millions of people have shown up when nowhere near those numbers were getting in before? Because they're coming from poor socialist places where they were destitute to a place where they go, this is the land where the streets are paved with gold. Yeah. People have big homes and nice cars.
And they have great lives. Relatively speaking, they're right. That's the thing. It is paved.
Exactly.
Right. It is paved with gold.
Yeah, but it's only paved with gold because it's a capitalist system that we built and we protected.
Yeah.
And we took care of our own people first. We helped others, but it's our country. We protected our borders. We protected our people. When you stop doing that, now you're Venezuela. In not very long, it appears.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know if I agree with you that they don't realize that's what they're doing. Again, I think maybe they do. Maybe a lot of them weren't ambitious people who climbed the ladder and did well for themselves. Although some of them, you know, the elites that go to Davos have certainly done very, very well and continue to. But they're the only ones getting rich. A lot of them in this movement out in the streets, the ones with the Hamas flags and all this, a lot of these people never did very well in their lives. And rather than saying, we'd like to find a way that we can do better and we can have a private jet, they're like, well, we're going to tear down all these other bastards.
Yeah.
And if we bring in all these, you know, tens of millions of migrants and unleash criminals everywhere, then we can tear them down and at least we'll all be at the same level. I don't think that's crazy either. Some people will go, that just sounds paranoid. No, I don't think it is.
And forgive me, I can't remember if I was talking to you or another guest. And I think it was another person. I asked some question about, you know, do all these people believe this? And somebody said, I can't remember who I was talking to. Someone said that, well, it's a two-tier thing, and not a two-tier system. It's a two-tier thing of belief. Like you were talking about, the real elites know this is all bullshit, but a lot of the people, the rank and file people, like you're saying, the people actually going to the Hamas demonstration and stuff, they've actually, like, they buy this. But the thing is, and they're basically being manipulated by people. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, that's basically in a nutshell what I was just trying to say.
Yeah, that's
maybe not artfully,
right?
But yeah, the people out in the streets, you know, they have to be aware that they're following the cues of people who do fly to Davos, but they're, well, that's just a handful of people. So I'm miserable because I never succeeded as much as I thought I should. And so lots of people aren't succeeding, and the people who are succeeding must be doing something bad, you know. And if we had a more equitable system, and in their mind, equitable, they try to frame it on race. They try to frame it on gender and transgender and all this other stuff, unless you're a Jew, in which case you're a terrible person. Then everybody should be equally miserable because that's the only other solution, which is completely false, but I can see how it makes sense to that mind.
Well, yeah.
Which is frightening to me.
It's the philosophy of envy, basically, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, you know, a lot of people don't understand that, you know, okay, your lot in life may not be as good as the people flying to Davos, but it doesn't, them flying to Davos doesn't change your life. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, you still have to do something about it, you know? But the thing is, and so a lot of people think instead of trying to raise people, all boats, you know, the tide raises all boats, it's like, we'll just drag everybody else down to our level and we'll all be quote unquote equal, but then nothing
will happen. Drain the pond.
Yeah.
Everybody will be in the mud.
Right.
You know, congrats.
Right. Hey, I want to move on to some of the aerodynamic shit here. So you've been writing about the problems with the Boeing airplanes. Now I have to ask you about this because I just read this like last night or this morning that this door plug that blew off this Alaska airliner, that now they're saying that airplane is not even a 737 Max 9. Have you read this? Have you seen that?
No, I have not.
And I
Everything
don't.
I've seen said
I
that
mean,
it
I
was a
know I saw. I know I
737
read
Max
this,
9.
but I don't know if it's accurate. That's the reason I was asking. You know, I
No,
don't.
I didn't see that.
Yeah. So the thing is,
That would be a pretty big error to
yes, it
make.
would. I know. That's why I'm asking. It would be a pretty big error. I agree. I agree.
Because I saw the FAA record for the plane for one of the articles and I pulled it up and said it was a Boeing
Okay.
737 Max 9.
Then I believe it. They're not gonna fuck around with that shit. So I was talking on this show just the other night about the fact that, you know, and I find this really amazing. Okay, there's 35,000 commercial airline flights in the United States, not world, just in the US every day. There's 10 million a year. And right now we lose one airplane every 2 years out of every 20 million flights.
Right.
And that's freaking, when you think about what's going on, when people, these airliners are for $100 million machines, and you wrote about this in your article about the fact they're unbelievably ridiculously complicated and they hardly ever fail. I mean, I just find this really amazing. You know, it's like people talking about the, you know, okay, why are ETs crashing spacecraft into America? You fly 37 light years across a galaxy and you get here and you crash. Yeah, that's because no matter how bad or how incredible your technology is, it's still complicated as fuck. I mean, you know, and
And
so
every once in a while, it's going to fail,
that's
you
right. Every once in a while it's gonna
know?
fail. Right. So I mean, and the reason I'm bringing this up is because okay, this door blew out of this air, right? That's terrible. And you actually mentioned this about the fact that apparently there's literally some screws and bolts loose, and that's terrible. But my real question is, whose responsibility is it? Is it Boeing's or the airlines? You know, Boeing can't monitor every goddamn plane they sell. I mean, you know.
Oh yeah, and I covered that. I linked to the actual FAA and NTSB guidelines for that. The primary responsible party is the owner slash operator of the aircraft. They have to perform the maintenance. They have to perform the maintenance in accordance with guidelines that are developed by the manufacturer and approved by the FAA and the NTSB. So a little bit of the responsibility spreads around everywhere. So is it a question of did they have good guidelines and good instructions and they failed to follow them, or were the guidelines and instructions bad? And the manufacturer and NTSB are responsible for doing spot checks. Were they doing those spot checks? We don't know yet. It's going to be a longer investigation to find that out. But the primary party is going to be the owner operator. So in this case, it's going to be Alaskan Airlines.
So am I a terrible person for assuming that because this hardly ever happens, the guidelines must be reasonable?
For the most part, yes. There have been exceptions because planes that we were building in the 1950s and 60s were pretty, I hate to use the word simple beasts. They were basically cars with propellers
Oh
on the front of them.
So, you know, I have a friend of mine.
Everything's,
Go ahead.
yeah, let me finish. Everything's gotten a lot more complex. More and more systems get added. There's more and more computer control. There's more and more interlinks to satellites in real time that are controlling things. The first big 737, scandal when there were actually two crashes. That wasn't a hardware failure. That was a flight control computer system that
Right.
was feeding bad information and telling the plane it was rising too quickly and steering it towards the ground when it was
Right.
actually performing correctly.
Right.
You know, that's a very complex one. This isn't one of those. This is people not tightening the bolts down.
Yeah, right.
You know, so those are two different situations, I think.
Yeah, I have a late friend of mine. I don't know if you're aware of this. So the in in the 1950s, British Airways were flying the Comets. They were like the very first
Oh, yeah.
commercial, and they would explode randomly in midair. Nobody ever really figured it out, and he lost his fiance on one of those flights. I mean, people, you're absolutely right about this. They were like cars with jet engines. You know, they didn't run until the Boeing came out with the 707. Basically, there was jet service before then, but it was not really reliable. I mean, that was kind of the start of the era, and I think that was 1950 or 60 or 59. I can't remember, but I don't know. I'm just talking. That's what I do.
No,
That's
they
why
were simpler beasts,
you're
but
right.
like everything else in our lives, and I'm a Luddite. Everybody knows this about me who follows me.
Hold it, just a second. You're a Luddite, and you write about UFOs.
Yes,
Okay, all
because
right.
the more complicated things get, the more crap can go wrong.
Yeah, that's
You
right.
know,
Correct.
I mean, you go back to the original Luddites, they were angry when somebody came up with a machine that could till the fields. Because they were stealing jobs from the people who pulled the rakes and the hoes and plows, you know, dragged by horses and
Yeah.
things like that. And yeah, a lot of those people got put out of work. The new stuff worked pretty well. But also, the new stuff was complicated in those terms in those days. And it broke down a lot more than the horses did. You know, the horses were reliable. So you can do better and faster, but you're also getting more complicated and you're introducing more modes of failure.
Right.
We're up now to the generation of planes where there's a lot of failure modes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, stuff that nobody considered when it was just a turbine powered engine with a prop on the front of it.
Right.
And it's like, well, if you spin the prop fast enough, it blows air backwards over the wings and you get lift and you fly. Planes are a lot more complex now.
Oh, yeah.
Everything's a lot more complex now.
Yeah.
And now we're adding AI into everything and
Oh,
don't even, we're
geez.
not going to get started on that.
Yeah.
And now it can just go off the rails entirely. I'm going to
Yeah.
give you a heads up. I got about 5 minutes.
Oh, okay. Very good. All right. All right. So, that's good. So I'm gonna just plow forward here to the end. Hold on just a second, because you did write about, first of all, is there a congressional briefing on UFOs? Is it today? Am I right about that?
I don't remember if it's today. I wrote about that a little while ago. It's this week.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a congressional briefing we're not going to get to see. And they are talking about the revelations from David Grush, the UFO whistleblower, supposedly, and the claims that he has made, and that now other people that are coming forward and having their claims cleared through Dopser, who are saying that Grush is correct and that the government has non-human intelligence craft and probably biologics, and Congress. Certain members of them wanted an update. They're getting an update. But I also heard, I wish I had a link in front of me if I'd known we were going to talk about this. If you go look on News Nation, very recently, there's a segment by Ross Coulthart, who is a great reporter who covers this
Yes, he
stuff.
is. Yeah.
He said he's spoken to people who know the people involved that are doing the briefing with Congress. And he said, don't get your hopes up for two reasons. Number one, nothing they're going to say is going to be released to the public. Everything is going to be classified. But more importantly, number two, the people that are being sent to brief them are not being sent to really tell them crap. They are being sent to say, well, here's the status. Here's what we know now. You know, here's what's been going on and what we're up to. But no matter what they really know, they're being told to just try to console them and go, okay,
Yeah.
we're not keeping you in the dark. This stuff you've been hearing, yeah, here's what we've been dealing with, and then leave them with a warm and fuzzy feeling. But whatever's going on really under the covers, they're not going to tell the members of Congress that because the members of Congress are asking way too many nosy questions.
And I never really asked you this point blank, but why do you think they won't release information? I mean, what there's so many different possible reasons. I mean, are you getting anything like classified from any of your sources or anything like that? You know what I mean? I actually, and if you can't say, I understand. But why do you think, what's the primary reason they won't release this shit?
I don't have a smoking gun, but I have become more and more convinced from people I've spoken to that it's a combination of factors. One of them is that they're playing with technology that they can't figure out, and they've been trying for at least several decades, maybe going back to the 40s, trying to figure this stuff out, and they can't, and they are terrified that the Russians or the Chinese or somebody else will figure it out first.
Yeah,
And if they admit that it's even out there, that opens Pandora's box, and then everybody's more interested, and they don't want to lose that race. The other half of the coin is they are worried about what the most recent trendy term is catastrophic disclosure, that somebody's going to come out and blow the whistle before any of the governments are ready to talk about it. And if they do that, they are seriously worried that people are just going to freak the hell out, which I don't personally believe, but it could also unleash a sort of new open arms race between various countries. Like, well, you've got these things. Well, yes, we've got these things, but you've got these things. And what's going on with all of this? And it could really create a lot of chaos. And the last aspect of it is, and David Grush has actually provided some support to this idea. A lot of people have for a long time assumed that if this is all real, that if they got this stuff, it's aliens, it's extraterrestrials. David Grush has continually refused to ever say extraterrestrial. He never says it. And when somebody says it, he corrects them. He says, we're talking about non-human intelligence. And in one interview, again with Ross Coulthart, one of his first ones, when Ross said, so you're saying we've got more than a dozen spacecraft? And Grush paused, and I still remember this was his first interview, and it was one of the first things that caught my attention, and I've never forgotten about it. He said, you could call them spacecraft, but I'm not sure that's the right parlance. So if it's not extraterrestrial and it's not spacecraft, what is it? And now you bring in all this other stuff people have talked about. Could it be time travelers? Could it be? And there's people inside the government, I've spoken to folks who know them, who insist they don't want this coming out and they don't want people talking about it because they don't think it's aliens. They don't think it's anything like that. They think it's demons. It's demons and angels.
Yeah, I've heard that
And
too.
I have always been left with one question. It's like I try to be open-minded to everything. And I'm not a totally non-religious person. It's like demons? Okay, let's put that on the playing board. Could be, right?
Yeah.
But my first question is, would a demon really die in a plane crash? And would a demon need a plane to start
Well, right.
with?
That's exactly what I was going to say.
That,
Does a demon build a mechanical
well,
machine?
why?
Yeah.
Why would there be anything? Would a demon leave a body behind to
Yeah.
find by a? Because if that were the case, I would think we'd been by now finding some demon parts various places around the world. They're everywhere in the Bible. Everybody's always talking about them. There's modern day sightings. People say, oh, I encountered a demonic figure. Well, if they're all over and they're capable of dying, shouldn't we have had a body by now?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I have a big problem with that theory. But no, I still lean towards the extraterrestrial hypothesis myself. I think the time travel thing is just so warped and so hard to understand. Interdimensional, maybe. I think we're learning more and more about how bizarre the universe is when you start looking at it at the quantum level and looking way, way out with the James Webb telescope.
Yeah.
There's probably more than the three dimensions we can picture. Is there stuff in other dimensions that we aren't capable of visualizing and measuring that might come through? I guess maybe.
Yeah.
Probably something like that. But I don't know if you and I have actually ever discussed in the show. My wife and I went more than 60 years. I never saw anything. We've seen five of them
Yeah, you
since
told me.
the end of
You mentioned that, right.
2020. And I can tell you, I have no proof. A little bit of a video that's crap. But I don't think it's anything we built. At least not the ones we saw. Some
Right.
stuff is mistaken, certainly. People see drones, they see balloons and things, make a mistake. But no, we saw stuff that, no, I absolutely refuse to believe we built that. We have no idea how to do that shit.
Yeah, I'm just going to leave you with this. Around 10 years ago, and maybe I mentioned that on the show too. I saw, I'm driving through a cornfield in southern Minnesota, and I saw one of those giant triangular craft fly right over me.
That's one of the ones we saw.
Yeah, and the thing, I have to be honest with you, it was just a gut feeling, but I got out of my car, and this thing flew right over me, and I'm looking at it, and for some reason, voice in my head says, that's one of ours, and I don't know why I thought that. I really don't, and I have no idea, you know, I have no proof or it's just whatever. That's what the voice
Maybe we got said. Some amazing technology they're not revealing to anybody, but it's like, how long have we had it, and if we had it for that long, why haven't we used it yet?
Well, that's the thing, you know, you're right. I mean, there's either they can't figure it out and then we're just sitting on it, or they have figured it out, we're flying this shit, but you're right, then why aren't we, you know, Richard Dolan talks about this, about the fact there's basically a secret society of like 2,000 people that are living 100 years ahead of us, you know? I don't know.
That's one possibility. The other one with the people that have not come out officially yet, but the stories we're getting from some of the reporters, your experience and, oh, that's one of ours. Maybe it's one that we were flying, but it's not one we built.
That's true, too. That's right.
Because Grush mentioned that some of them were fully intact.
That's right.
Maybe we figured out how to fly them.
Yeah.
But we can't figure out how to make them.
That's correct. You're absolutely right.
And so maybe you wouldn't reveal that because, well, we've only got the one. We probably shouldn't risk sending it into battle.
Yeah.
Let's just take it out for a spin, have some fun, see if we learn anything. We'll bring it back to Lockheed Martin or whatever and keep trying to figure this shit out.
Yeah.
You know, that's a possibility, man. I can't rule that out.
Yeah. Jazz, it's always a pleasure. And your last 5 minutes, now I've kept you over time, so I really appreciate it. I always love talking to you. Thank you.
Always a pleasure being here, man.
My pleasure. Thanks. Yeah. You take care. We'll see you soon, okay?
All right.
Bye-bye. I hope you enjoyed that. I thought that was great. A lot of times from these really long interviews, I will set a timer and I will leave the broadcast desk here and come back. I watched that whole thing again and I was there. It's like, you know, I'm just a weird fucking dude. The first 20 minutes of this show sucked. That was great. I don't know. Yeah. So, yeah. Well, a lot of things are there at the end. A lot of things in the middle. No, Jazz is a great, great guy. I mean, I'm lucky that he comes on here on a regular basis. He's the weekend editor for hotair.com. Next week, I mentioned this at the top of the show, we have on the associate editor, David Strom, and he's a great guy, too. He's actually here in Minneapolis. The amazing thing is, I've talked to him a million times. I've never actually met him in the flesh. Maybe someday. We'll get together for a drink or something. He's in Minneapolis, and Ed Morrissey, the editor-in-chief of HotAir.com, he's coming on the week after. And I think he's in Minneapolis, too. I don't know if he's moved out of town. I don't know. But anyway, he used to be. I know that. So, anyway, just cool shit going on there. I'm gonna bring up one more thing here before we leave tonight. I previewed this on the show description on all the services. I'm not going to talk about the DB Cooper thing tonight, partly because I couldn't find my show notes. I couldn't find my notes on this. So what I know is all off the top of my head. It is pretty amazing. I promise you we'll get into this next week. The one thing I want to end with here, and Jazz was talking about the AI stuff, you know, when it comes to like flying the airplanes and stuff. Well, OpenAI, the company that started ChatGTP, they are opening a store where you can buy a very, very different variations of ChatGTP. I didn't check the store out. I read some articles. Matter of fact, I'm not actually sure if you already have, you know, you can subscribe to ChatGTP. Now, Jazz didn't talk about this on this show, but he's talked about this previously. He is a subscriber. You can pay a monthly fee, and I don't know what it is. And you can subscribe to use ChatGTP so you don't have any lag, and you basically get priority access to it. And he is subscribed. He says it's amazing the shit that ChatGTP will and won't say. but anyway, so they have opened a store where you can buy various versions of it, actually built by the public. You know, they're coders, you know, they fuck around with shit, you know. I mean, this is really how the Microsoft Windows, not to mention Windows, but even the iPhone, with the App Store became popular, is because they allowed people, and you know, this is kind of got lost to history. Steve Jobs did not want to do the App Store thing. He didn't. They really had to talk him into it. He was afraid he was going to lose control of the product, and Apple is kind of like fiercely controls what they do, and for good reason, because they want to make it a closed system so that everything runs perfectly. I mean, this is one of the primary problems. Excuse me. One of the primary problems with Windows is that Windows has had all sorts of shit bolted onto it. And it's like, yeah, you can, you know, write Windows programs. You know, they've never made it easy. It's not easy to write a Windows program. But you know, you can do that. And then you have to, you know, but Microsoft or Apple's theory or philosophy the entire time they've been doing this is that they want to control the environment so that it runs perfectly, so that everything meshes with everything else. And you stop and think about that when you was talking about introducing apps into the whole thing that are built by third parties. Well, Steve Jobs didn't want to have anything to do with that, and they really had to talk him into doing it. And of course, it blew the whole thing up, you know, and which is, I suppose, that was the point. So you go on the App Store now, and of course Android has the same thing. You know, there's a Google Play Store, and you can download, you know, how many are there millions of apps available for all sorts of shit, you know? But anyway, now a chat, and I'm sure, I'm guessing at some point, well, no, I think you can already still do it. You can already do it, but they're not, no one's hyping it. But I think you can already download ChatGTP apps for your phone. I think. I got to check into that. I know there's places, as from a developer standpoint, I know there's places where you can buy templates to actually make them. So I'm assuming that's possible. At any rate, the other thing, like I said, is I don't know if you already have to be a subscriber at OpenAI to access the store. I don't know. I don't even know if it's up and running right now, but apparently it either is or it's coming very shortly, one or the other. So you'll be able to, you know, you get your virtual butler or whatever the hell it is. I don't know. I got Alexa. I got Alexa in my office. I basically use Alexa to set alarms and for my shopping lists, you know, for groceries. That's what I use Alexa for. I just started now to use it as a to-do list. It's a centralized place. And also, I talk to Alexa, and Alexa, I'm actually amazed. I'm amazed at how well Alexa can transcribe my voice. I really am. Now, okay, I have a pretty decent voice. I'm a pretty good talker. I got a lot of practice talking here, you know, so maybe I shouldn't be so surprised, but I am. Alexa does a pretty good job transcribing what it is I'm saying. So I don't know. That's my life, man. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. I want to thank Conk News for sponsoring this debacle. That's at conk.com, conk.com, the best news aggregator on the internet, period, on the intertubes. Check that out if you get a chance. Like, if you're a news junkie, it's a sexual experience. I swear to God, it is. I don't know if I should apologize for the first 20 minutes of the show or not. It's like, the interview was fantastic, and our thanks to Jazz Shaw for that, too, for coming by. So next week, Monday, economist Murray Sabrin. Tuesday, Hot Air Associate Editor David Strom. Wednesday, the At Night Dynamic Duo, Jennifer Oliver O'Connell from RedState.com and Jeff Neumeier from Conk.com. And Thursday, Stan Gordon, famous UFO investigator. That's our week next week. Once again, sorry about yesterday. And I don't know, like I said, I don't know if I should apologize about the first 20 minutes of tonight too, but whatever. So anyway, I want to thank you folks for watching. I really do. The show's growing by leaps and bounds. And because I don't know why you see a show like tonight, thanks for that. Appreciate it. It's going to be cold as hell here this weekend in Minneapolis. Fuck it. I got to go to Miami or something. I went to school in Miami. Why did I leave there? It's like, shit, what's wrong with me? Anyway, good night, Esperanza. Good night, Uncle Donnie. And good night to you, wherever you are. I'll see you. Have a nice weekend. I'll see you on Monday.